Even my computer is confused. All right, well, many years ago, this would be back in the 80s, some of you are aware of this, I served as a pastor of a small congregation in Decatur, Indiana, and if you can imagine it, I don't know if he's here today, but Nathan Rumschlag was there in a Sunday school class that would be similar to our Brink class, so he wasn't yet old enough to be in youth group. He's just a little kid back then. Nathan, are you here? All right. Now, this was back in the days when churches would publish a monthly newsletter for its members. And these would not be online newsletters. These would be real newsletters made of real paper. And our church did this as well. And so I would ask certain members to contribute articles, stories, testimonies, and that sort of thing. And, you know, had there been that whole yellow sheet assignment thing, I would have used that to solicit participation. On one of the monthly issues, a member named Tom Snyder wrote a poem for me to use. And now I'm not that much into poems, but this one was quite remarkable. It was very vivid and powerful in describing the story of Christ's birth, ministry, death, resurrection, and coming kingdom. And it was rather long, many, many verses, and it was divided up into a number of sections, maybe 6 or 8 sections, and each one was like a poem in itself, and it all went together. And I included it, the newsletter was published, and things went on as usual. About 6 months later, during a special kind of communion service that we had, Tom came up to me seeking my forgiveness. He had been holding a deep grudge against me, and the Lord was dealing with him about it. And obviously, I was eager to learn what I had done to offend him. After all, this was the only person I had ever offended, and so I was quite curious about the whole thing. He was upset because I had taken the liberty to edit his poem. Believing that I did not like the last 2 sections, I simply deleted them. The least I could have done, he said, was to talk to him first. But typical of the way that I do things, he said, I gave no thought to the feelings of others, exerted my own way, and plowed ahead, deleting sections from his poem that I thought were stupid, confusing, unhelpful, or whatever. Well, I was stunned. I had no idea what he was talking about. And any defense I offered was received with certain skepticism. Now, fortunately for me, I tend to be a pack rat, unable to throw things away, and so I still had the original copy that he gave me. And as it turned out, the sections that did not make it in the publication were on the back side of the page. The poem was written in such a way that the last verse on the first page sounded like a conclusion. And so, yes, part of the poem was eliminated, but no, it was not intentional. It was a fluke, an innocent mistake. So after showing him this and offering an explanation, he was greatly relieved and apologized. And from that point on, I have tried to remember to always look on the back side of anything that anyone gives me. In fact, if you get a letter from the church, I will typically insert a small little arrow down at the bottom to let you know that there's more on the back. And this is because of that particular incident. It's easy for any of us to miss, you know, the other side. But the lesson here is far more than that. Far more than getting in the habit of turning a page over and checking. And it is even more than the importance of talking to someone we think has wronged us, giving them a chance to explain instead of letting resentment set in. That point itself would warrant a whole sermon, but that's not the lesson I want to concentrate on for this morning. This particular incident raises an important question. Why would Tom be so quick to assume that I would intentionally edit what he gave me? I had never revised or changed or tried to improve anything anyone ever gave me, or anything he ever gave me, or anyone, or anything that anyone gave me. I had no history of that sort of thing with this newsletter. And Tom was not the sort of guy who just assumed the worst in others. So what was going on here? Well, the thing is, there was a history of sorts. Maybe not with the monthly newsletters, but it was not unlike me in other areas to take liberties, correct what other people did, try to improve upon it, and plow ahead with my own way, because my way was the best way, and no one else could do it as good as I could. It was only a matter of time before I would edit someone's poem. And typically, in the interest of achieving the greater good, I could be quite oblivious to other people's feelings. This was unfortunately something I was known for. I was totally blind to this, actually, but apparently this was my reputation. So if you think I'm bad now, you should have seen me 30 years ago. Each of us have... Sir, what are you? You're over there laughing again. Aren't you in the nursery today or something? Each of us have certain character flaws that unfortunately contribute to how others define us. And so even when we are totally innocent, we're going to get blamed for things. We have to own the fact that our history follows us and that we have actually poisoned the well along the way. And therefore, when someone wrongly assumes something about us, well, those assumptions are usually not without some basis. And this is one of the reasons courts typically don't allow the jury to know of a defendant's prior convictions. You know, it may cloud their objectivity. The defendant may have a long track record of breaking into people's homes, but in this particular case, he might actually be innocent. But in our day-to-day lives, our past, our reputations are entered into the evidence all the time. People's experiences with us and their observations, they all play a significant role in how they relate to us. And it works in the other direction as well. If we suspect that someone is wronging us in some fashion, we will issue our own verdict of guilt based on the person's track record, rather than fully considering all the facts and evidence. Right or wrong, it's just how things work. I do it to others, others do it to me. You do it to others, others do it to you. One's reputation is a very powerful thing. It conditions the way that people relate to you. And once it is formed, it is very hard to undo. And whatever good may be in that reputation, it can, however, be shattered in an instant. Now, not surprisingly, there are some proverbs that speak to all this. Do it again. All right. Proverbs 25, 9 through 10. If you argue your case with a neighbor, do not betray another man's confidence, or he who hears it may shame you, and you will never lose your bad reputation. The ESV translates that as, your ill repute will have no end. The New American Standard, and the evil report about you will not pass away. The New Living, and you will never regain your good reputation. In the Christian Standard Bible, and you will never live it down. Though this proverb in particular is addressing that of betraying a confidence, the warning here about one's reputation does have a wider universal application. That's how it works in the Proverbs. We've talked about that. But let's take a quick moment here to see what's going on in this one. If someone tells you something that is to be kept secret, but at some point you divulge that secret because there is an advantage to do so, so as to bolster your case in some argument, or to give your accusation against someone more weight, or to clear yourself in a dispute, whatever the case, well, as this proverb points out, the price for that will be quite high. You may end up convincing others of your point, but it will come at the cost of you losing your reputation. No one will trust you again with those sorts of things. And you don't want to be known as someone who will sell out a close friend, because you will never live that down. The gist of this proverb is pretty simple. Protect your reputation. It's not worth losing just to win an argument. The sentiment behind that is echoed in this one, a popular proverb at the beginning of chapter 22. A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver and gold. Again, it's hard to find something more valuable than having a good reputation. Guard it carefully. Don't ruin it. Likewise, whatever is part of your reputation that is undesirable, no expense should be spared. No sacrifice too great, no effort too unreasonable to repair that. A good name is worth more than all earthly treasures. And this proverb, saying pretty much the same thing, it's actually found in the book of Ecclesiastes. A good name is better than fine perfume, 7:1. And this one, in chapter 20 of Proverbs, even a child is known by his actions, by whether his conduct is pure and right. A child's behavior reveals who he is, provides a pattern by which we can judge his character. It's all part of forming his reputation. It sets in place the way we will interact with that child. And so if that is true of children, the point of the proverb is, how much more is it true of adults? The one who lives a self-examined life will ask himself, what is it that other people know me by? What character flaws stand out to others? Have their experiences with me conditioned them to relate to me in a certain way? You know, with each of us, there are positive traits that other people recognize and appreciate. And quite frankly, with each of us, there are also negative traits that people recognize and have to work around or stay out of the way of. The one who strives to be conformed into Christ's image will take into account his flaws, will reflect upon his reputation about how others see him, and will, of course, take steps to improve. Indeed, knowing how others view us is a very effective way in coming to grips with their flaws. You know, those things that we are blind to. Well, it's safe to say that others are not blind to them. Think of the next time you pray to the Lord to show you areas in your life that need to be sanctified. Hopefully you pray for that sort of thing. And typically, the answer isn't going to come in a vision or angelic visitation or dream or even in the so-called gentle whisper. Typically on this, the Lord answers such prayers with an audible voice, like family members, co-workers, your boss, friends, church members, neighbors, spouse, former spouse, former boss, former friends. People you are at odds with can tell you a lot about your flaws and blind spots. It's amazing who the Lord can use to tell us what needs work in our lives. And there are other ways to assess weaknesses beyond what other people will tell us. A good one, of course, is one's credit score. It can be quite revealing. I can tell you a lot about yourself. You know, it is somewhat of an index of whether you can keep your promises, of whether you are responsible, reliable, of whether you are willing to make sacrifices in order to meet your obligations to others. Do you think that you put others first at the expense of yourself? Do you think that about yourself? I put others first. Well, does your credit score agree with that? Another one is your file, that dreaded file at your place of employment. You know, what do your annual reviews say about you? Your reprimands? Anything in that file that would reveal actions or attitudes that are condemned in the scriptures? How many traffic violations are on your record? What's behind all that? What does it say about how you think about yourself, about how you think about others, how you think about authority? The self-examined life will take, you know, all of this into account. The book of Proverbs refers to a number of different reputations that a person can be plagued with and gives all sorts of advice on how to deal with such people. And I want to read through that list this morning. But the advice, of course, cuts both ways. It is outward and inward. In each one is this implied warning to not become such a person yourself. You know, think of the proverb, like a bad tooth or a lame foot is reliance on the unfaithful in times of trouble. Well, the proverb is not just a commentary on those who are irresponsible, as in look out for those people, avoid them, don't depend on them. It's also given to us as a means of self-reflection. This is the very frustration that other people experience when I am unreliable. You know, I am to them a pain of a bad toothache or broken foot. So that said, as I read through the various reputations, see if any are ones that would ring true with you or that you are known by, that others have spoken to you about. Do any resemble comments, constructive criticisms that you've heard through the years? If so, how much attention are you giving to it? How much effort is being applied to, you know, undo it, to fix it? That, of course, is the real question. Here are the ones that I found. I'm sure I missed quite a few. We have the quick-tempered, the gossip, the greedy, the flatterer, the proud, the lazy, the glutton, the foolish, the nagging wife, the rebellious child, the unreliable, the angry, the stingy, the dishonest, the quarrelsome, the schemer, the gullible, the promise breaker, the perverse, the haughty, the mocker, the untrustworthy, the adulterer, the adulteress, the stiff-necked, the ignorant, the ruthless, the deceiver, the impulsive, the unfaithful, the devious, the drunkard, the rash, the sexually immoral, the sluggard, the scoundrel, the madman, the bloodthirsty, the moocher, and lovers of pleasure. And we have those who won't accept correction, those who take advantage of the poor, those who are slack in their work, those who try to get rich quick, those who spread slander, who lack discretion, who talk too much, who chase after fantasies, who lack judgment, who scorn instruction, those who delight in airing their own opinions, who dishonor their parents, who reject knowledge, who withhold good from others, who plot harm, who stir up dissension, who love to quarrel, who wield power over others. Sure, I missed some, but the question, of course, is, are any of these traits that you are known by, any part of a reputation that you have? Have others challenged you on any of those or made even passing comments as a way of kind of challenging you? And maybe it's not something found here on this list or something found in the book of Proverbs. Maybe it's something else, but everyone is known by their actions. Everyone is defined by a certain reputation. If it's true of children, it's going to be true of adults, the Proverbs say. Recognizing our weaknesses and what it is that other people know us by will prove to be of tremendous help in our relationships with them. And more importantly, it is good to know what it is in our lives that yet needs to be sanctified and attend to it accordingly. So, part two. Given that we all have certain things about our reputations that can be quite bothersome, or at least a bit bothersome, I think it'd be good for us to consider some helpful and practical ways to minimize the harm that this could bring to our relationships. Obviously, the ultimate solution is to replace the bad with the good, and we'll talk about that some, but that, of course, really takes time and effort, a lot of time, and so there are some other useful counsel, if you will, that can be employed immediately. The last time, you may remember, it's been a while since we were in the Proverbs, but I talked about friendships and relationships, and I promised that we would continue with that theme, and, well, this is it. So I have four of these to work us through. The first one is, we've already talked about, don't be so quick to take offense when others make wrong assumptions about you. But this is really an important point to press. Typically, our first reaction is something like, how dare they? Or, they have no right. But really, the better reaction would be some self-reflection, some humility. You know, something like, given my track record, maybe I can't really blame them for thinking that. Or, if people assume that I'm guilty of that, whatever it is, then I obviously have some work to do on how others see me. Think how much easier marriages would go if that attitude could be adopted. Much less relationships with friends, church members, coworkers, family, and so on. You know, extend a little charity to those who make wrong assumptions, falsely accuse or suspect you of something. Now, granted, that sort of thing cannot be justified, and I'm not justifying it. But again, you know, your reputation may have contributed to that, and so sometimes you have to assume some of that responsibility. And all of this leads to the next one, number two. When falsely accused, the remedy has to be more, much more, than acquittal, proving your innocence. A better use of one's energy is that of repairing the reputation that contributed to the accusation. And by accusation here, you know, I'm primarily thinking of, you know, the everyday kinds of stuff, not really big, heavy things. You know, someone reads into something you say more than what you intended, and you're upset by that. Someone suspects that you had an ulterior motive when you did this or that. Someone takes offense because you handled something in a way that they didn't like, and they are sure that you're trying to get at them. You know, that those kinds of things. I think of that example I used earlier about the newsletter and the poem. Now, certainly it's appropriate to get things cleared up and point out that in this case, they got it wrong. But the real work, that which should require much more of our energy and concern, is that of conditioning others to not assume such things in the first place. Everyone follow me on that? That's where the real work needs to be. Pride, really, I mean, that's what compels us to prove our innocence. Humility compels us to look within. Humility compels us to extend grace to those who assume wrongly. Humility compels us to accept our own contribution to that wrong assumption. Humility compels us to use these situations for self-examination. If people think that you are obsessed with making money or spreading gossip or flirting with others or that you drink too much or are seeking attention or are condescending or whatever it is, even when you are not, then instead of getting all irate about that, work on repairing that image. I have a family member who is upset with me because they believed I was too pushy with them on something. Well, on the example they brought up, I wasn't being pushy at all. They read way too much into something I said. Unfortunately, I had been quite pushy with this person in the past, and so in this, I was, quite frankly, reaping what I had sowed. In the bigger picture, because I treasure that relationship, the task for me now is not that of convincing them of my innocence, but of winning them over. And they have been quite slow in responding to that. I want to push them to see that I am not as pushy as they think that I am. So I'm stuck. Number three, regarding one's record of wrongs, reputation if you will, hope that people will forgive, but don't expect them to forget. Regarding the past offenses that you caused, well, it's pretty safe to say that forgiveness is almost always extended to those who are sincerely remorseful. But forgiveness is not the same as trust, and people often get that confused. Forgiveness purges the heart of resentment and hurt, but it does not purge one's reputation. We need to let people be a little leery of us. You know, if you sold me a car and lied to me about how great it was and then later apologized, well, I'll forgive you. I won't harbor any resentment. I won't feel angry or hurt or bitter, but I'm not going to buy another car from you. That's not unforgiveness. We call that wisdom. You know, I might buy another car once I'm assured that you are trustworthy. In the same way, we need to let others treat us with a certain degree of caution if we have a record of wrongs with them. You know, it can take years to rebuild a good name, a good reputation. Now, for instance, if I told you this morning that I have turned a new leaf and will never again be, and I think I've actually shown this a little bit this morning, but and I will never again be impatient, irritable, pushy, insensitive, but will instead be easygoing, gentle, empathetic, lighthearted, and patient, your response, rightly so, would be, we'll see, we'll see, we'll see. I mean, it would take at least, it's not going to take more than just this little episode this morning. It's going to take 5 or 10 years to reverse all that stuff that I'm known by. And this is what we are all up against. It really is. It just takes time. And we need to be patient with those who are skeptical and extend some understanding on that. Reputations are like credit scores. It takes a long time to move that number from the 600s to the 700s, and a really long time to move it into the 800s. Number four, be charitable toward those who make wrong assumptions about you, and be charitable toward those you may be tempted to make wrong assumptions about. So turning the direction here the other way. You know, this is something we are all guilty of, even if we think that we aren't. We all do this, and it can create a lot of unnecessary problems. It's very easy to judge motives. It's very easy to read into the words of others more than what they intended to mean. Or it's easy to dismiss other people's actions or comments because we are convinced that something else is going on. And we justify this based on our history with the person, their reputations, and our speculations about all that. You know, okay, it's one thing to be suspicious, but it's another thing to form a hard conclusion. And such conclusions can do great harm, and we have to be very careful. Again, Proverbs 3:30, do not accuse a man without cause. It takes more than suspicion. It is always best to give others the benefit of the doubt and assume that their motives and intentions really are honorable, unless we have an objective reason to think otherwise. It's always better to err on the side of being charitable. Now, this might sound a little bit contradictory to some of the points I said earlier, but again, remember, my intent here is that of helping each of us navigate our relationships and to do so with grace and humility. And so, expect others to hold your past against you, and in that, be charitable toward them when they make wrong assumptions. But do not hold the past of others against them. Be charitable in giving them the benefit of the doubt and assume the best, not the worst. In other words, at all times, in all situations, make every effort to be at peace with all people. Charitableness is always appropriate. In light of that, check out this proverb. A person's insight gives him patience, and his virtue is to overlook an offense. What a proverb. Wisdom yields patience. Patience with others. Wisdom, thinking correctly about a situation, enables us to cut others some slack. Wisdom from above, James says, is peace-loving, considerate, and full of mercy. And so we should be able to overlook people's offenses when they make wrong assumptions about us. We cut them some slack. And we can show restraint when we are tempted to make certain assumptions about them. We give them the benefit of the doubt. Cut them some slack. The New Testament refers to this as forbearance. Colossians 3, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other. Bear with each other. And forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Bear with each other. Endure. Put up with each other. Finally, this morning, a few things need to be said about the path one needs to take to restore his reputation. And I actually did not prepare anything in my sermon for that. And so what I'd like to do is just open it up for your contribution. On that question, how does one repair his reputation? How does undo it? What advice would you give? I'd like to open it up. What sorts of things would come to mind? Some of these things would be fairly obvious. Perhaps some might not be. Who would like to start us off? What?
Consistency.
Consistency. Very good.
Considerate.
Consistency. Being considerate. Good. You want to elaborate on that a little bit, Jeff? The consistency? You want to give an example or something? Just stay at it.
Right. A negative pattern the one way, you're going to have to show a positive pattern.
All right. So to use my example, the fact that I was patient this morning is not going to convince everybody. I've got to show like an ongoing pattern. All right. Very good. John Schutt.
One of the hardest things to do in the world is to ask others to forgive us.
All right. Very good. I was hoping someone would mention that. Yeah. When there is remorse, contrition of heart, the sincere effort to confess and own up and humility, that will go a long way in reversing that as well. Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry. In the last 2 years, one of the things I've been really hit hard with is when you started the sermon on humility. And you asked for humility. I'll point people in your directions to show you where all your flaws and where you need it.
Well, if we want humility developed in us, as we've said, you know, you have to accept humiliations. And so they come, don't they? They come. Very good. Who else would like to contribute? What advice would you give to someone who wants to undo their reputation and rebuild it?
I've seen some situations where rather than simply asking for forgiveness, there are reparations that could be made to repair the damage.
Yeah, that's right. Damage has been done. Let's repair it. Good point. That would go a long way, certainly. Nate?
Like you said, the imbalance of work required to build the relationship versus it only takes a moment of madness or of sin to compromise and ruin it. And so just know that that's what it requires, years on the front end, and can be lost very quickly.
We have to be patient with their expectations of ourselves, but certainly with others in their skepticism with us. Brian?
Don't do it alone. Find someone you can confide in.
Very good. Accountability, someone that will support, stand with you, help you, someone who will speak frankly to you. Hopefully we all have people like that in our lives, but very, very important. Again, you know, we're blind to our blind spots, but other people are not, so it's helpful to have them speak to us. Dave?
Well, I think of what John said, praying for and asking for humility, that I think in my mind always generally assumes that when those things come, we'll try to deal with them well. But you could also be proactive and just ask people, like, what do I need to work on? And actually actively put yourself out there, which is even more difficult.
Yeah. And you should always go to pleasant, agreeable people who are really nice when you ask those questions. Chad?
I think about a reputation at large, it's kind of hitting on the same thing you've heard. If you're known for, say, lying or shoddy work or something, trying to exaggerate that in the other direction. So, you know, for lying or doing something dishonest, having verifications
it's a good point. Yeah, it's good. Thanks. Anybody else? All right. Let's go ahead and make the transition to the baby dedication at this point. Is Macy, you're ready.